It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, median household income in the city of Milwaukee and its suburbs has gone down over the last 40 years. We'll talk to a guest about what's behind that trend and if there's hope for the average income to bounce back up. First, is fun a thing of the past? Sure, you can replace a lot of in-person activities with online versions, but is that actually fun? During the first few months of the pandemic, our guest says the experience was new. We maybe had the energy to try out a new hobby like baking or online board games. We thought maybe it'd be over soon, but now maybe we've lost a little bit of our zest. If you've found your life to be lacking in fun lately, you're not alone in that. Our next guest went on a quest to try to figure out where the fun had gone and what fun was all along. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Does this sound familiar to you? Have you been feeling stuck, maybe in a rut lately? Or what are you doing for fun? What is fun? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Rachel Sugar writes about pop culture, food, and feelings for publications like Vox, Bon Appetit, and New York Magazine. She wrote the piece, What Was Fun, for Vox. Rachel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I know it sounds like these issues have been on your mind all along, but what really got you started down this road of figuring out what happened to the fun?
I guess I just became increasingly aware this summer that, like, my life is fine. Like, things were fine. I was healthy. I was, you know, as employed as I ever am. And yet everything felt kind of devoid of joy and delight. Like, everything felt sort of the same slug, this sort of endless drudgery. And I didn't really understand exactly why that was happening, because again, things were, you know, I was very lucky and things were largely fine. And I kept joking with people, like, remember fun? Wasn't fun fun? And then I started to, like, become less clear what I was missing. Like, what is fun? Like, what is the thing that I am not experiencing? And that's how I started to sort of look into it. Like, what is this sort of ill-defined, like, you know, it when you're having it, experience that is fun.
Yeah. And this took you to that fundamental level of what does it mean to have fun? And you talk to, you know, psychologists and other people who try to analyze what fun means, and it's harder than it sounds. How do the experts try to define what it means to have fun?
Yeah, you would think, when I started this, I sort of thought that there was going to be a very clear fun is X. And it's harder to define. I think, you know, one consistent theme that people kept bringing up is that it's just so subjective. What is fun? So, you know, one person I talked to had this sort of model of that, you know, fun is any activity that falls on the positive side of valence. So anything that you enjoy at all, that is, like, you enjoy more than you don't enjoy it would count as fun. And then within that, there are sort of high arousal versions of fun. So that would be, like, I don't know, like an amusement park or like going, like being on a roller coaster, and sort of quieter versions of fun, which would be, like, you know, sitting in an armchair with a book. And that all rang true to me. It just seemed really, really vague, and kind of hard. It's like, I was still having trouble pinning it down. Another way to think about it is to sort of look at if you need, you know, when you experience fun, you're sort of having this engaging experience that is liberating, that, like, gives you a break somehow from the rest of your life. And I sort of liked that started to really speak to me, because I think it's the sense of difference that I was really missing, the sense that, like, there is a break, like, everything in my life, like, being everything happening at home, everything happening with the same, you know, people that, you know, that you're seeing, that you're quarantined with, there's sort of the natural demarcations between like, this is work and this is fun and this is sleeping and this is, you know, walking the dog or whatever. Those all started to collapse. So I became interested in this idea of kind of space being a thing that marks off fun, spontaneity being a thing that marks off fun, novelty, where something is new, that makes it easier to kind of escape yourself.
And that point, the novelty is one thing that sounds like it's been tricky for you and a lot of people with the pandemic. Like, okay, my 5th through 10th, I mean, I don't bake bread, but my 5th through 10th loaves of sourdough bread, that might have been fun. My 90th through 95th, maybe not. You know, those first Zoom drink sessions if people had those, fun. But that, the novelty wears off there too. And maybe that's where a lot of people are now. What do you think?
That feels really true to me, that it's for me, I think it's the novelty plus the spontaneity. I mean, something that I really miss, is like, you know, just popping into, there's a new store and you're on a walk and you see something and you just pop in for a second. And that's something that's just not, I mean, I guess in some places that's starting to happen. That's not something I'm doing a lot. I'm not just, you know, sitting in a cafe and listening to amusing conversations other people are having. Like, that's not happening. And yeah, and novelty. It's all possible. Like, it's all possible to find these things now. But I think it takes an amount of effort and planning that I think people, I know myself, are just too, like, burnt out to give it that. Like, you can have experiences, you can go to online events, you can gather people and meet in a park, and it's all possible to do, but it just takes an amount of engineering that is really, I think, hard to psych yourself up to do it these days.
Talking to Rachel Sugar, she writes for Vox and elsewhere. She wrote a piece called What Was Fun at the Vox website. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel like you miss the fun things you used to do pre-pandemic? Have you found new ways to have fun? By all means, share them. Inspire the rest of us at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Connie is with us in Portage. Connie, hello.
Hi. Old, and since the pandemic and the election and everything, and staying home all the time is a little depressing. Plus, we played euchre 3 times a week. And in March, when everything shut down, we haven't played euchre since. And it's very lonely because you miss all your friends, and we laughed. The fun was amazing. So now I get in my car every single day, and I'm learning about Wisconsin. I go, look, dark roads I've never been on before. I drive every single day, and that is what's kept me going. And I just went to an antique mall now, and I had a lot of fun.
Connie, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm glad you found some fun. I hope you get to play some euchre. Yeah, it gives new meaning to stay home in euchre versus having to stay home for a pandemic. So Connie misses that card game, Rachel. She has found ways to explore the world, which I've heard from a lot of people, including travel writer Rick Steves, talking about, you know, let's take this opportunity to explore the world nearby us. I don't know. Are we tricking ourselves, or can we really have fun doing that, do you think?
I think we can really have fun doing that. I do. I think, you know, I mean, I'm mostly getting around on foot these days, so I'm a little bit limited in how much exploring I can sort of do on a regular basis without really, you know, you need bathrooms and stuff. It's you know, you're a little limited.
Sure.
But I think, like, yeah, I mean, I think that is the novelty and the sort of engaging with the world in a new way, even if it's a sort of basically familiar world, sort of discovering the small things or maybe bigger things, but these differences that you wouldn't see otherwise. And I found that too, like noticing, you know, being very aware, like there's a new bakery, we should try the new bakery. No, I mean that feels real to me. I mean, that feels, there's some novelty, there's some spontaneity. You don't know what you're going to find. There's like a sense of adventure. she was talking about, you know, discovering this antique mall. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly what's been really hard to, at least it's been hard for me to sort of create those situations. But I think those are largely the situations that I do miss. So it's great to hear that people are finding them.
Connie, thanks so much for calling in. Hope you get to gather with your euchre buddies again in not too long. We're talking to Rachel Sugar. She writes about pop culture, food, and feelings for places like Vox, Bon Appetit, and New York Magazine. And she wrote a piece about fun and what it is, how we miss it maybe during the pandemic, how we're trying to find new forms of having fun. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you noticed a lack of fun in your life? What has brought fun into your life or back into it? Have you made trade-offs, lost something here, but found something new there? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now with writer Rachel Sugar talking about her piece at Vox.com. It's called What Was Fun? And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Have you had fun lately? What was it? Has the pandemic changed what you do for fun, what you think of as being fun in the first place? Do we overuse the word fun? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Rachel, one thing I've noticed is that, you know, pre-pandemic, trying to get four grown-ups together on a regular basis for whatever was like a logistical challenge on the order of the moon landing. It's easier to do it in some ways online, we've learned. Do you think that kind of online gathering may stick around? It won't replace in-person meetings, but it might stick around as a way of having fun with other people even after the pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I have not found sort of the Zoom happy hour model of socializing super fulfilling, but I will say that one thing that's been really nice and that started sort of almost immediately was that distance stopped being a factor in who you hang out with and who you get to see and talk to the extent you're sort of seeing anybody. So all of a sudden, instead of just seeing, you know, friends that live in Brooklyn where I live, I'm seeing friends that have moved to San Francisco, I was seeing friends in Norway, I was seeing friends in Michigan, because what's the difference? You know, like online, there is no, it's all the same. It's sort of this great flattening. So that has been genuinely really nice to feel connected. Like just to feel like distance sort of doesn't matter. And I hope that part sticks around. But I found, you know, my more fulfilling social encounters have been with people who live close by, meeting up in the park in person. Like for me, at least, I think Zoom, specifically Zoom. I mean, the phone is nice, but I'm pretty zoomed out.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Mandy is with us in Verona. Mandy, hello.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you want to tell us about, Mandy?
Yeah, you know, during this time, we've been enjoying the outdoors a bit more and creating some new outdoor spaces. And I realize this doesn't probably work for everybody because we live in a rural area. But two things that we did is recreate some space in our yard. And one of that was to create kind of a mock campsite.
Huh.
We got a little fire pit, made a little tent pad. My kids set up a tent. We strung some string lights. We've been using that probably 3 to 4 times a week, hanging out outside because the weather's been so nice. So that's been a lot of fun.
Awesome, Mandy. Thank you so much for sharing that. Hope you can stick with at least some of that during the winter. And that fits in, Rachel, to, I think, a wider theme of people trying to change their personal space. You were talking earlier about you're in the same space more and more, whether you have a yard or just indoor space. I don't know. Some variety there, some novelty in our home setting. Can that be at least one element of recreating fun?
Yeah, I think it, I mean I think the idea of, you know, creating a campsite or people, I think there's been a real run on fire pit things. I don't know what they're called. But people have been buying those, I think, in big numbers. I mean, that seems, yeah, that seems genuinely fun to me. I think, you know, my own success at trying to demarcate areas in my tiny apartment has not been super successful. But I do think that the changing relationship to the outdoors, and again, like you said, I think we'll sort of see how this plays out in winter, although other places do it. So maybe we'll discover an ability to do it that I haven't had, at least in previous years. But like, I go to the park all the time now. I go to the park every day now, which I didn't do before. And it is nice. And I know people have been redecorating like crazy. It's something. I mean, I think it's at the very least, it's something.
Mandy, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234, talking about fun and trying to find ways to keep our fun alive when we can, even during a pandemic. And Rachel, you look back at history just over 100 years ago to the misnamed Spanish flu epidemic, global epidemic, and you looked at what people were doing to try to have fun back then. What did you find out?
I thought it was sort of delightfully similar. It was so much more similar than I'd expected. But I was looking at some archival newspapers, and there's a piece in the LA Times from 1918 that's just laying out what people were doing, and it is so similar. A lot of reading, a lot of there was a great run on phonographs and player pianos. I think I'm not sure what the update of that might be. Streaming services and, you know, ukuleles. I'm not totally sure. people were sort of really into fortune telling, outdoor sports. There was golf. People who had cars, taking long drives. You know, we've talked about that just a few minutes ago. Playing sort of, yeah, socially distanced sports. Tennis was one. People talking about picnics. And that's, I mean, this was sort of the summer of the picnic. We'll see again going into winter. But a lot of my social life has been picnics in the park. Part of it, I was looking for answers, and it sort of seems like maybe we found the answers. The answers seem pretty timeless.
And another thing that stood out to me was this newfangled communication technology went really big, the telephone. There were complaints that people were blah-blahing so much to pass the time that it was clogging the phone lines.
Yeah, that's what I've read. And they were like, there were all these ads from papers at that time that are like, stop talking. Like, we need the phones for emergencies. Like, get off the phone. And that certainly feels, I mean, that feels totally familiar. I've talked to a lot of friends who you know, I'm millennial, I guess we don't like the phone generally, but I've talked to a lot of people who are like, we should talk on the phone more. So again, it seems like we're back.
Well, you've done this deep exploration of fun in your own life and around the country during the pandemic. I mean, do you have, I think you kind of left it open in some ways in your piece, but do you have some thoughts for people who are feeling as you do that they haven't quite recaptured their old sense of fun? Are there thoughts of starting points where we can try to rekindle that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, some of it has been just like not acceptance of not having fun, but not being as resistant to the idea that like if this is not the most fun period of my life, that's okay. And then part of it, I mean, I I've been a real proponent of, like, we just need warm coats. Like, we do not have to fall prey to winter. Like, we do not need to never see each other again outside. We just need to, you know, dress for the weather. We'll see if I can stick to that. But I've been a little bit, I'm trying to be a little bit less judgmental of myself for some of the things. Like, I've been binge watching a lot of television and like, okay, maybe that's okay for now.
And actually another point I wanted to get to is, you know, especially, I mean, you were in New York, which saw the worst of this thing. But you are, and you were when this is at its worst. And the thought of maybe, well, if I'm having fun, should I feel guilty about it? How do you reckon with that?
Yeah. I mean, look, like it was, as it has been at various points, a lot of places. It was hauntingly, it was haunting in March and early April with the constant sirens. And, at the same time, I think it's not helpful to, it doesn't save anyone's life to feel terrible at home. Mm-hmm. Like there are people who are doing real work, whether it's like essential work or mutual aid that is like actually life-saving, but sitting at home, not having fun versus sitting at home, having fun, doesn't really seem to me to have a huge moral difference. So I'm in favor of the fun one.
Rachel, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing this with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rachel Sugar writes about pop culture, food, and feelings for publications like Vox, Bon Appetit, and New York Magazine. We've been talking about a piece she wrote. It appeared at Vox.com titled, What Was Fun? You can keep sharing your thoughts, by the way, and experiences at the Ideas Network Facebook page. Have you found new forms of fun in the last, what, 6-7 months now? Coming up after the news, we'll talk to a longtime Milwaukee journalist about why median household income in the city's metro area has gone down over the years and how it's impacting people who live there. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tonight, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will deliver a statewide address and will bring you live coverage starting at 6. Evers will address the COVID-19 pandemic, which has killed now more than 2,300 people in Wisconsin and where the number of new cases has been rising since early September. That's live coverage starting tonight at 6, on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now, we've heard a lot about the economy from presidential candidates coming through Wisconsin during the last year. The Milwaukee metro area is the state's major economic hub, and by one measure, median household income, it's headed in the wrong direction over the past four decades. Our next guest crunched the numbers and found that household income in the city of Milwaukee and the suburbs and surrounding counties has gone down since 1980, thanks in part to a changing jobs landscape with big hits from the Great Recession along the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you feeling this yourself wherever you are in the state? A gradual decline maybe in your own household income, that of your family over the generations, maybe in your community? If you've lived in the Milwaukee area during and after the Great Recession, has your job or your income been hit? Have you changed job sectors, kind of jobs? Do you think there's a way for the area to build up household incomes again? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Mike Goucher is a fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University and a longtime Milwaukee journalist. He did this research for Marquette's Lubar Center for Public Policy Research and Civic Education. Mike, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. It's good to be with you.
Before we get into your findings, let's look at the measure you use. There are different ways to measure, you know, income and wealth. You focused on median household income. What can we learn from that?
Well, the person that I did this report with, John Johnson, who's our Lubar Center Research Fellow here at the law school, we had fairly long conversations about what was the best measurement of how the region was faring economically. And we came to the conclusion that median household income was the most accurate way to measure economic prosperity. And we really say that, Rob, for a couple of reasons. The primary one is that rapidly growing wages for the richest workers can certainly raise per person or per capita income numbers. But at the same time, you might have people in the middle or people on the lower end of the economic scale who are seeing absolutely no improvement. So it can be a little misleading to measure it in per capita income numbers. So we think median household income does a better job of capturing the economic well-being of the Metro Milwaukee population.
There are a lot of differences within the area that you're looking at, but let's start with the big picture. This 40-year long view look, what did you see when it came to overall household incomes in the region?
Well, what we found was the median household income in the region, in the metro area, and we should define that as the four-county metro area, so it's Milwaukee, Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee County. We found that median income had fallen since 1980. In 1980, for example, in the city of Milwaukee, the median household income was $53,000. The national income average was $54,000. Today, if you look at the city of Milwaukee, the national median income in real dollars is $64,000. And in Milwaukee, it's just $44,000. So you can see in the city itself, we're going in a direction that is south, and the nation is going in a direction that is north. It's kind of a disturbing thing. But it's not just a Milwaukee, a city of Milwaukee phenomenon. Our suburbs are still generally pretty prosperous, but household median income in the suburbs is also lower than it was in 1980. It was $78,000 then. In real dollars today, it's $73,000. What we saw, and I heard in the open of this, and it's fair to point out that a lot of this has happened in the prosperous WOW counties. It happened really since 2000. We peaked at median household income in 2000 at $86,000, and since then, it's fallen $13,000 per household in the suburbs. So even in Waukesha County, the wealthiest of the metro counties, a very prosperous county, median household income since 2000 was down $8,000 per household. In Ozaukee County, another well-to-do county, it was down $14,000 per household. In Washington County, it was down $13,000. So it's not just a city of Milwaukee phenomenon.
Is there a common theme driving those declines in the whole region?
I think there probably is, and what we looked at was employment trends and job trends. And I think what we came to a conclusion that jobs that had been lost, especially from the 2000 to 2019 time period, jobs that had been lost were eventually largely replaced, but the jobs that replaced them simply didn't pay as well. And so you've had that along with an aging population, where you have more people reliant on retirement income. And those two factors combined tended to bring down the median household income levels.
Talking to Mike Goucher about a report he co-wrote for Marquette's Lubar Center for Public Policy Research and Civic Education showing declines in median household income in the Milwaukee metropolitan area, not just the city, but the county of Milwaukee and its neighboring counties as well. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your thoughts and questions. What would need to happen to help that region or whatever region in the state you might be in that you're seeing in an economic doldrums? What might help it to bounce back? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Mike, I think people might hear this and say, well, that's a Midwestern city phenomenon. This is a Rust Belt phenomenon. You do some compare and contrast with other cities in the Midwest, and the answer seems to be yes and no, depending on which cities you're talking about.
That's a good way of putting it, Rob. John Johnson and I did look at other cities, and yes, Milwaukee, Metro Milwaukee did fare better than Metro Detroit and Metro Cleveland, but we fared worse than Minneapolis, Madison, Chicago, Kansas City, St. Louis, Indianapolis. Of those cities, we can say that Minneapolis and Madison fared the best. Chicago, Kansas City, and St. Louis had more modest gains in household median income. So there is that point of comparison. And this gets to the other point of this story, and that's the employment situation. This is very dramatic. we were down about 6,000 jobs from 2000 to 2019. So during the Great Recession, we lost about 68,000 jobs. We got all about 6,000 of them back. So we're down 6,000 for that time frame. But compare that to Minneapolis's metro area, for instance. While we were losing 6,000 jobs, they were gaining 235,000 jobs. Indianapolis gained 201,000 jobs. Even Kansas City gained 92,000 jobs. So, yeah, we did better than Detroit and Cleveland, but those other numbers really jump out at you, and they're a pretty dramatic point of comparison for Midwestern cities.
Well, that raises a whole mess of questions that are kind of, I think, outside the bounds of your work here, but what kind of, I guess, questions would you want to see answered? Why, you know, some of those other Midwestern cities did so much better than cities like metropolitan areas like Milwaukee, Cleveland, Detroit?
Well, I think part of it is population growth. People are moving to those cities. There was a significant population growth in the Minneapolis metro area, the Madison metro area, Indianapolis. That is fueling part of it. People are moving there, feeling there are opportunities to be found there. I think the kind of jobs that are being created also has something to do with it. And we can get into this in some detail, but the jobs that are being created in the metro Milwaukee area are not terribly high paying jobs for the most part. There is an exception, which I can mention later on, but that is part of it. I think it is, what are the jobs being created? How lucrative are they to individuals? And is there an energy, a population energy that is drawing people to these metro areas? Do people feel that that city or metro area is sort of on the come? And I think that's a challenge. It's a perception issue, I think, for Milwaukee.
Let's break down where we're seeing job growth and job decline in the region. What have we lost? What are we getting?
Well, let's talk about what we lost. So we lost, as I mentioned, from 2000 to 2019, we lost about 68,000 jobs. We replaced about 62,000 of them, but they tend to be lower paying than the jobs that were once here. For example, during that time frame I just mentioned, we lost another 45,000 manufacturing jobs. So those jobs pay an average of about $67,000 a year. They're good paying jobs. You contrast that with the jobs that are being created. The number one and fastest growing sector of the metro Milwaukee economy now is what is called healthcare social assistance. So we're talking nurses, nursing assistants, personal care assistants. Those jobs pay an average, we found, of $48,000 a year. It's certainly a decent paying job, but not as $19,000 less, frankly, than manufacturing jobs. We found fairly significant growth in the accommodation and food service workers sector. That's what it's called. It's, you know, people who prepare food. The average wage is $18,000 a year. That's been an area of growth. But again, that does not raise the median household income. So that's what's going on. We're losing some jobs that have paid more historically. We're gaining some jobs back, not a large number. But those jobs simply do not have the average wage that would cause you to raise your median household income level.
We're talking to Mike Gouchet, fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University, about his research showing median household income in the Milwaukee metro area has dropped overall since 1980. A lot of variety in there, but it's a true story. The report says the city of Milwaukee, county of Milwaukee, and the suburban counties, the so-called WOW counties around Milwaukee, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you live or lived in that area, what have you seen change over time? Is this story, the loss of manufacturing jobs, part of your own story or your own family's story? If you have moved to Milwaukee or one of the surrounding communities lately, what brought you there? What do you think, what would you do to sell your community to possible residents and possible employers? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our talk now with Mike Gouchet, fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University, looking at median household income in the Milwaukee metro area and why incomes have gone down there across the region over the last four decades. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts, your questions, and your reactions. Let's go to a caller now. Luann is with us in East Troy. Luann, hi.
Hi, guys. Thanks for this topic. I think it's really interesting. I wanted to ask Mike Boucher about the trend that was going on for years where they'd take one full-time job, split it into two part-time jobs so they wouldn't have to pay insurance for the employee. And how does that factor into his research?
Interesting question, Luann. Is that something you were able to pick up in the census and other data you looked at?
I cannot speak with any precision about that. It was not something that we looked at specifically in the research. I think it's a very intriguing question and one well worth considering. We just did not consider it for the purposes of this report. So I'm sorry about that, but that's the best I could do in terms of trying to answer that.
Luann, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Mike, something that did strike me, you looked at household size in the region, mostly stayed pretty steady. But in the suburban counties, a rise in the number of households that consisted only of retirees. Talk about that.
Yeah, we found that about a fifth of the households now were what would be called retiree households. And that has resulted in sort of a downsizing of the typical household size in places like Waukesha County from, I think, about 2.8 people to 2.3. This is actually an important trend. And it makes, if you're an employer and you're making decisions about where you can locate a business or whether you can expand a business, this is an important issue. It's how much availability is there in the workforce? How much can I count on available workers to meet the needs of my business? So it is not a small thing, and it's something that we found kind of interesting as we began to look, you know, more closely at the numbers. The fact that you do have this larger and growing share of retirees who have incomes that are generally lower than working people, they definitely are on the rise in the Wild Counties in particular. So some of the economic growth that has been seen in the Wild Counties, the challenge will be providing the workforce of tomorrow for those counties.
Now, one subject I don't want to overlook here, it's no secret we have pretty big racial disparities all over Wisconsin, including in the Milwaukee area. What do you see when you look at racial gaps in income and how it's changed over time?
Yeah, I think this is pretty glaring, and you know, it's a, and I'm glad you pointed that out. It is a problem not just in Metro Milwaukee, but across our state. But in the city of Milwaukee, for example, to tell you how things have changed over time, since 1980, we found that the median household incomes for Black households in the city of Milwaukee had declined significantly across the board. The median income for Black households in the city is now just $30,000 a year. It's $39,000 in the suburbs. And a really good way to look at this is to put it like this. In 1980, median household income for a Black middle-class family in Milwaukee was $6,000 a year more than the national average for Black households. So Milwaukee was actually doing better than the nation was in terms of middle-class Black households. Today, that same middle-class family in Milwaukee earns $10,000 a year less than the typical middle-class Black family. So you can see what has happened in the city. That's a disturbing trend, and it's a trend, frankly, that you can see play out in different ways, Rob. You see it reflected in lower home ownership rates, something that John Johnson and I have also written about. You see it in higher rates of poverty, joblessness, incarceration. So it is a significant problem for the city, and one that does not have, we'd all like it to have an easy answer, but I don't think it does have an easy answer.
Talking to Mike Boucher from Marquette University, looking at a new report on median household income in the Milwaukee metropolitan area. Declines in the last 40 years. However you slice it, wherever you look in that region, urban, suburban. Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Mark is with us in Bayfield. Mark, hi.
Hi. Thanks for exploring this topic. I just wanted to find out how much of the lack of job creation or the kind of job creation that would help improve the median household income is attributed to the lack of business formation in Wisconsin and maybe how that plays with immigration in Wisconsin too.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know if your report gets at this exactly hat on, Mike, but I know you looked at job numbers in higher paying fields like financial industry, yep, technology, things like that. What do we see and what do you have to say to Mark?
Yeah, I think the best answer I can give is that there are probably two parts to that answer. In terms of business formation, I think I would talk more about entrepreneurship, and I would talk more about the creation of new businesses, new companies. Wisconsin, generally speaking, has lagged in that area, and I think that's probably reflected in some of what you see in our metro area. We are not leading the way in technology jobs in this country right now, although there are good people doing good things to try and change that paradigm. The point that you make, Rob, is there has been one area of pretty significant growth in metro Milwaukee, and we were I don't know if we should have been surprised, but we were a bit surprised by this. It's very rapid growth in a sector which is known as management of companies and enterprises. And as we said in the newspaper story, think private equity and management firms. These are very, very high paying jobs. And the metro area has added about 15,000 of those jobs in the last two decades. So that is, an encouraging sign in some respects. It certainly boosts our per capita numbers, which are much better than our median household income numbers. But back to the tech sector, I just want to make clear that there is a, you see what's happened in the Madison area where it has a pretty vibrant tech community. They're pushing in that direction here in Milwaukee, too. There have been investments by Fortune 500 companies like Northwestern Mutual. I think that's still to be determined, still evolving. But I do think the fact that we have not to date in the metro Milwaukee area achieved the same kind of success as some of these other cities we've talked about in that area, I think that's a challenge for us as a region.
What kind of things are you hoping, Mike, that policymakers do with your report here, whether it's the local, county, or state levels?
Well, I think we need to – one of the things that we've tried to do at the law school is we try to report on metro area trends. And I think we need to sort of face up to what we face in reality. And I mean, there are people who were not thrilled with the report because they feel it paints a more dire picture of the region than it deserves, that the region is doing a lot of things well, that there are some new manufacturing innovations that are on the way that are creating jobs. And it's not our intent to speak poorly of the region. It's just our intent to have an honest discussion about where we are. And I think to have people take a look at why. That's the big question. What's going on? And if we believe that we want to do better in terms of median household income, what are the possible options for us as a region to pursue? So it's just I think we see it as a conversation starter, and we see it as an attempt to, I think, cast some real world numbers on a discussion that often, as a longtime resident of Milwaukee, a discussion that often boils down to a one or the other view of the city. One narrative is that things are really starting to boom in Milwaukee, and there certainly are some things to be terribly excited about. And then there's another narrative that says Milwaukee's really got big, intractable problems, and it's just not going to be able to be solved. What we want to do is just bring what we feel is real facts to the table, and so that people can make an honest assessment of where we are and what needs to be done.
Mike, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Rob. Really enjoyed it.
That's Mike Couchet, fellow in law and public policy at Marquette University. He talked with us about his research on median household income in the city of Milwaukee and its surrounding suburbs and why they've dropped since 1980. Find a link to his work at WPR.org/Central Time. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, it's our weekly look at the latest in national politics. We'll look at the news from President-elect Biden, changes in Congress, and two big Senate races still to come in Georgia. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Last week, we talked to Wisconsin author Chloe Benjamin, who shared some great reading suggestions, and you called in with some of your own favorites. You can find her list over at WPR.org, and you shared some of your current favorites on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Here are some of the ones you've been reading. Brandy recommends the autobiography of King Henry VIII by Margaret George. Brandy says, I love how Henry will give one account of events, but then his fool, Will, sets the record straight. I feel like that guy would be an unreliable narrator. Kelly says, Leave the World Behind. That's by author Ruman Allen. Deborah says, Anxious People by Frederick Backman made me laugh out loud several times. It was a good human relationship story. Deborah says, a pleasant relief from my other reading, Rage, A Warning, Very Stable Genius. You get the idea. Kirsten says, I found that I have a hard time reading lately. When I do read, it has been almost exclusively Stephen King, old and new. I love King anyway, Kirsten says, but normally I read a much wider selection of genres. Just can't get into books, or everyone has a normal life. Marie recommends books on Wisconsin wildlife and nature. Mary says, I just read The Stationery Shop. Very sweet love story, plus interesting parallels between today's election and the one in Iran in the 1950s. And Susie says, MC Beaton's Agatha Raisin Mysteries, cutesy fun mysteries solved by a 55-year-old woman looking for love and a gin and tonic. Lots of fun, quirky friends. You can keep sharing your favorite reads over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. This is Central Time.